Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And we talk about such interesting things. Today we're going to be talking with you a little bit. I hope to do. We want to talk about, and today I want to explore this issue about people living together. Living together, yes, what is it? There are 12 million people in the United States who are living together without being married, and this does not include roommates. Not include, now we're just talking about people who live together as a form of cohabitation. See, to truly live together as a couple. Now, we're going to talk about roommates as well. About a third, get this, 12 million people now, how many do you think there were in 1990? Well, it's up 70%. 70% from 1990 to 2005 in 15 years. And now get this, from 1970, what would you imagine it is? From 1970, people lived together. They didn't live together too easily at the time because it was just the beginning of the revolution and people were still not living together. It was frowned down on, especially by religions. Especially when birth control was not really readily available, people did not live together. They got married instead. From 1970 to 2005, 35 years, up 600%. Six times as many people are living together now than they were in 1970, and there's not that many people, more people on the planet. You could say, well, just the population became that big. No. Six times as many people. Most people who live together rather than being married are age 25 to 35. About one-third of all first births in the United States. This is the first birth, not the second child, but the first child to a woman. One-third are to unmarried women. Interesting, isn't it? Which we learned also, 10% of all children born are to a father different than the one who's married, right? Because somewhere another guy got in there. Now, the Ozzy and Harriet couple, for those of you who know what the Ozzy and Harriet couple is, some of you will be smiling, some of you will look at me blankly because you were born in some silly time when Ozzy and Harriet weren't there. But the Ozzy and Harriet couple, which is this idealized family, wonderful couple who get along and are married, that consists of about 10% of all primary relationships. So if you aspire to one, not many people. Now, the reason for the massive increase in cohabitation is due to a number of factors, including women in the workforce, right? Women are now in the workforce. Women are changing, not women, but changing religious attitudes. You know, you used to be so afraid of your religion because they set down such stringent rules. No-fault divorce laws have encouraged people to live together rather than get married. Greater visibility of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people who want to live together, which is still only a tiny percentage of the number of people that live together. Now, most couples eventually marry. Here's the way it worked out. If you live together for 4 years or more, let me just find it. 5 years, that's it. Within 5 years of a live-in relationship, half the couples married. Within 5 years of a living-in relationship, 94% separated. So of the 6% that survive and go on to 5 years, half of those, 3%, wind up getting married, which is two people. Just kidding. Okay. About four, many people just continue to live together. But living together in many ways is replacing dating. You know, there's an associate professor at sociology at the University of Michigan, Pamela, her name is Smock, S-M-O-C-K. She's among the researchers who are bringing attention to a living arrangement that is almost a foregone conclusion. Most singles believe in serial cohabitation, Most singles say, I'll live with the guy first and we'll see what it is. It's going to be a prelude to marriage or it may not be any marriage at all. And in fact, many women who choose or who find themselves to be the stronger one in any relationship that they have, they are the stronger of the two. What they choose to do is to live with rather than get married to because they don't want to be burdened. They feel that they want the freedom to get out. Also, keep in mind the increase in the number of divorces, which is now 60% of all marriages go into divorce, leads some to believe that living together is a better idea, especially when they know couples who do it. They know other couples. In fact, a growing number, get this, a growing number of senior citizens find that they lose governmental benefits if they marry. If you're alone and you're older, you get certain monies that you would not get if you marry. So we've got a funny system working. But we're not just talking about living with a mate and a prospective mate. I'm talking about living with anybody today because I'm going to bring up some issues and I'm sure so are you. So many of today's women would rather remain independent, so they avoid a traditional approach implied by marriage in regard to being secondary to a primary relationship, which is usually what it is, the husband, and he has a wife, and you know, husband is 6 letters and wife is 4 letters, and so they feel like it's diminished in some way, so they don't want to do that. Partner, much better. Also, you find that living with someone is cheaper than living alone. It is. It is. There's a lot of good side to living together, and there's a lot of downside to it. So we're going to talk about living with someone else, whether it be for you, whether it be for a partner. And I'm also going to talk about, hopefully we get to today, living and working with the same person. There's a formula that's difficult, right? And I'm also going to talk about living with a depressed person. About how it is to live with a depressed person. But let's just start off at the beginning. You choose somebody to live with. Now, let's say you're going to do it as a couple. Whose house? You know, you have an apartment, he has an apartment. You have a house, he has a house. Whose house are you going to move into? Now, here's a big one, you know. One of the rules of living with someone and taking on somebody who you're going to live with is change the bed. Because that bed has ghosts. And it has many ghosts. You know, maybe it has many ghosts. Maybe it just had one or two ghosts. But, you know, there's something about having a mattress that starts off fresh that makes you suspect that it has not been. You know, and I've known enough people to talk about being spooked, especially when a woman moves into a bachelor's apartment. You know, she talks about some of the feelings that she has about that very mattress. And when the mattress is changed, not just turned over, but when it's changed, it feels like a fresh life. Because you have to do something to change the apartment. You have to change the living space. You know, you got to change it. Repaint it. Get new furniture. Do something. Because it's really two people moving into a new space together rather than he's living in your space. But living in somebody else's apartment and living in their apartment, it's very hard to shake the idea that it is their place. It's very hard, you know, especially if you have like doormen who know you by name and they know this as the other person who comes in, you know. So they call you by, you know, they know you and they're friendly with you and they're kind of on your side. There are issues you have to deal with once you move in. Here's some of them that you know, I'm sure. How about messy and clean? Now, this is a classic scenario. One of you is messy and one of you is clean. Well, by the time you get to live together, you should know that by now. By the time you get to live together, you know whether the person who you're going to be with is messy or clean. Now, if you're doing it with a roommate, it's something you better check out first. Because messy is not necessarily bad. Right? It isn't necessarily bad. Let's say you're messy. And you move in with somebody who is messy. Do you know what happens? When a messy person moves in with another messy person, the first messy person becomes inordinately neat. Yes, they do something. They start controlling the other person's messiness. You see, most of us like to be messy. We want to be messy in our own way. It's like if you have a messy desk and somebody comes over and puts a pencil on it. You say, get that off my desk. I leave my desk just the way it is. You see, I could find anything anywhere, they say. I was looking at my desk the other day, and I said, I could find anything anywhere, and I found something in the garbage that I'd been searching for 20 hours. But still, the belief is it's my mess. And people like to have their own mess. So let's say a messy person gets together with a neat person. You got to make a deal. Look, honey, my coupleship is not about my cleaning up and being different than I was. So you have to be careful, because if you get together with somebody who knows a lot about psychology, they start analyzing how your messiness. Well, you just want to be a child and you want somebody to clean up after you. No. We won't have any of that. And you could start analyzing their neatness. You could say, oh, you're being so anal and you're being, you know, retentive and you're kind of putting everything in place and that's the way you are. No, you don't find fault with each other. If you're going to live together, make a deal. You're okay the way you are. Now let's look at it. We don't have to negotiate. But if you're a messy person and you're with a neat person, you got to hire somebody who's going to straighten out the house. Because if it really offends the neat person, you got to find somebody who's going to do the job. Now, if you're two messy people, it's really good because then you know you both should chip in. But if you're the messy one and you're with somebody who is very neat and likes things in order and finds a beauty in the aesthetic order of their place, the best thing to do is you get somebody to come in and clean up the place for you, if you could afford it. If you can't afford it, stay home and clean the place. But, you know, it's part of the deal, the part of living with somebody. I always think it's fascinating. You know, when you get two very neat people together, do you know what happens? Nothing. Nothing. It just stays neat. But two messy people, one of them becomes suddenly the neatnik. You know, and it's a funny thing around issues of neatness, and you're going to find this issue among other things, especially roommates and couples. One person is going to become the parent, and one person is going to be the child. Now, this does not usually happen between two male roommates at college. They usually have, I'll mess up my place, you mess up your place. This is guys doing guy things. They treat it like a hotel room. They have nothing hanging on the walls. There is no sense of beauty necessarily. But women living with women in college spaces have been known to make a clear distinction between who's going to be the parent and who's going to be the child. Who's going to be the one who's going to make the other one feel guilty? Right? And this is the kind of way it works. It becomes a collaboration. You're the child. At times you're the petulant child. At times you're trying to please mama child. But think about anybody you live with now. Who's the parent and who's the child? Ah, you say to me, you only live with a cat. Well, who's the parent and who's the child? Right? You better be the parent. Okay, so roommates become parents and to think about it, to find it, to work on it, it's one of those things, sorry. So one of the things is, who's going to turn off your cell phone? Is it you or your partner? All right. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. We're kind of fooling around, but we're going to get to some very important issues here. The neat versus sloppy issue, of course. Now there's a noise level to consider. Some people live with a different noise level than other people do. And I tell you, this does not have to do with ear sensitivity. It doesn't have to do with what your tympanic membrane. Some people like to listen to television at such a high level because they want to be involved in the story of the television. They want to get lost in it. So they turn up the sound so loud that they get lost in it. So you think that's crazy, don't you? Well, what about the people who turn up the music so it's so loud that it engulfs them? What about if you wanted to dance? Why suddenly is low music not good for you to dance? You got to crank up the volume to dance. Well, same thing with people with television. Some people watch television, and they'll watch it well into late night, and the noise makes them feel at home. Now, I don't know if you've noticed it, but in almost every late night television programming of any kind, movies, there's always screaming, yelling, cars screeching, and things like that, because if to put on a movie late at night, you got to keep the person woke up. Now, this is all okay unless you're living with somebody who is watching something like this when you're going to sleep. This becomes difficult. So you've got to determine noise levels. You got to figure it out. Some couples get headless earphones. Not headless, wireless earphones. It was such a cute image for a moment. A headless earphone. I like it. Okay, wireless earphone, you know, you attach it to the TV and you could hear the TV when, but you can't really hear it. You could hear it, but your partner can't hear it. That's a consideration. The flashing light, light sensitivity is another big sensitivity. Some people can't stand light in their rooms. They want dark houses, especially when they go to sleep. And this goes on to the sleeping preferences. They want to go to sleep and they want it to be dark, because their body responds immediately to any light, as many bodies do. You know, melatonin secretion stops as soon as there's any light in the room. Melatonin helps you sleep. So many people who have a light sensitivity will tell their partners, I don't want any light, but many partners can't sleep without a closet light on. They need a little light. So that's got to be settled. You got to find that out before you try to live together. One of the ways to try to deal with it is to wear an eye mask, but that's not very successful because people always take off eye masks in the middle of the night somehow. And the other way to do it is to, if the person's trying to watch television without sound, that flashing light will keep you awake. So it's just a difficulty, but it's something to be mapped out in advance. Mapped out so that you should consider it seriously, but you see, nobody considers all these things at the beginning. You're hot for each other. You like it. Oh, this is terrific. Let's fall into bed. Who cares what happens? Who cares what color the room is? Right? You make love all day. And boy, if we live together, we can make love 40,000 times a day. So we'll just move in. Yes. It doesn't work that easily. It does work. I mean, it does work for a short period of time, and then it doesn't work. And these differences come up, and they bite you in the bottom. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Maybe it's an idea for you the next time around to give a consideration because you've had it happen so often. Maybe it's the reason we have this serial cohabitation happening, where people go from cohabitation to cohabitation, from partner to partner. Noise levels are very important. Noise levels are so important that even if you have your own room, frequently you don't have a door that's solid enough to block out sound. You just don't have it. It doesn't block out the sound from your room to the living room. Let's say you have a partner in the other room, or let's say you have a roommate in the other room. The sound of your room could disturb them easily. So it's something to consider early on. Can you muffle it? Sometimes some construction is necessary. You know, you put in sound sealers around your door, replace your door with a solid core door, if you really want that, if it's going to be separate. I knew a woman who, in college, made a lot of noise when she touched herself, and she was kicked out. It was a trauma of her life. The other kids all got together, the other college students got together, and they voted to kick her out of the room because she made too much sound in her own room at night. Funny thing, major trauma. Sex differences are very important. Noise levels important. Aesthetic consciousness. There's another very, to coin a phrase that was said by, who was that said that? Jamie Ross it was. Yes, it was. She said, aesthetic consciousness is an important, serious consideration, and she's a pretty wise person. Aesthetic consciousness basically is, how pretty do you find what? You know, for a man, aesthetic consciousness could be the Playboy Channel. Could be. You know, it could be live bodies. It could be a nice car. It could be. Of course, there are men who are very sensitive and have different kinds of aesthetic consciousness. To many people, if you have an aesthetic consciousness, you're really invested in beauty. And you want to see things that are pretty. And you want the other person to appreciate your appreciation of that which is pretty. So if you have something that is a beautiful jewel, if you have something that's on display, you know, like something really special, a statue that you really love, you really don't want your roommate or your partner using it as a paperweight, you know? There's something about it. Just getting that aesthetic appreciation is important because if it's different, if it's very different, it has to be recognized and talked about because the other person's not going to have it. I mean, what's wrong with taking the sculpture you have that you paid so much money and using it for to hang your jewelry on? What's wrong with that? You know? Well, jealousy issues are very important issues when you're living with somebody else, whether it be a partner or it be a roommate. Now, if there are three roommates, you have two roommates or more in a living situation, you know all kinds of jealousies come up because there we get the mommy and the daughter or the son situation, and you're like a family competing for attention, and who is favored and who is not favored, and it becomes very difficult. But the other difficulty is jealousy. Jealousy issues have to be discussed, especially if you're living together. Very often, friends come over, and they meet your roommate, and your roommate kind of co-opts your friends. Your roommate becomes friendly with your friends. And sometimes you don't want your roommate to become friendly with your friends. You know, sometimes you want to keep your friends as your own friends. So that has to be discussed or considered. It's like if you're somebody who is going, let's say that you consider yourself a fairly plain-looking man, and you're just an average man, and your roommate happens to be a super-looking guy. Right? And every time you bring a girl over to your apartment, she's attracted to him or instead of to you. And she finds up flirting, you find her flirting with the other guy. You know, if that happens every time, you have to consider that. If those differences are big, how big are those differences going to be for you? This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind. The refrigerator. There's another big one, right? In the refrigerator. Who moved my cheese? Better yet, who ate my cheese? We're out of milk. Food sharing sensibilities. You know, with most couples who love each other, for the best time, well, he's welcome to it if he enjoys it. Well, she's welcome to it if she enjoys it. But give that a few years. And then suddenly, I was looking forward to that egg salad sandwich. I was looking forward to that tofu thing. You know, I was looking forward to it. I was going to drink that. Who drank mine, you know? And you didn't replace it. And that becomes more of an issue later. It's always good to have a discussion about the refrigerator. Some people who are in living situations, I know they do it here at my office, people put their names on things. You know, if they have food that they want to keep for later and they're going to eat later in the day, they put their name on it and they stick it in the refrigerator. Well, then there are things that happen, and we're going to take your calls after this. I want to hear your calls, and then later I'll get to talking about living with a depressed person. After the break, which takes place at 1:30, I will be taking your calls. Toilet issues. Yes, toilet issues are a big deal because, you know, one of the most private, of all the privacies in the world, what happens in the toilet is perhaps the most private. There, people feel really, really protective about it. Many people don't. I knew a man who had a door on his bathroom that was an antique door, but it was glass. And it had no shade. And so when he would invite people over to his apartment, he would say, yes, you can go to the bathroom, but they had no shade on a bathroom door. And he thought it was kind of a cute thing, but, you know, he was just saying, he's like a, you know, an alpha male. He's saying, I'm in control here, and if you're going to use the toilet, you got to watch out for me watching you, and you got to deal with it. Pretty amazing stuff. How about your toothbrush? Your toothbrush. Would you share your toothbrush with your mate? Now, what could you? How could you shake your head like that? If you have somebody you love whose mouth you're penetrating with your tongue over and over again and who's doing the same to you, you will not use their toothbrush and they can't use yours? Well, you better get it clear. You better get it clear, because it's a funny thing between couples. It's a funny thing. You could use my toothbrush, you know. Oh, I can't use your toothbrush? What do you mean I use? It's okay. I'm sure people share everything else, but toothbrushes are certainly funny. Don't use my toothbrush. And do replace the toilet paper after it's finished. And this becomes one of the real little, you know, would you please replace the toilet paper when you run out on the roll? Would you clean up in there a little bit? You know, it's kind of funny always waking up in the morning and walking into a room where there are towels all over the floor and everything is messy and you, how did that happen? How did that happen overnight? You weren't even there. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So there are many considerations about living with a person, whether they be a roommate or whether they be a partner. To have a happy relationship and a full-time cohabitation, you know, trying to keep yourself, maintain some kind of a relationship outside of the house as well as your own. Try to have friends outside of the house as well as your own. Try not to create everything being in the house is one of the things that they learn. But there are people who have lived together and worked together at the same time. And that is a very difficult thing. And as I said, it's something that I've seen people work through and work through successfully. Finally, in the event of a death or disability, here I said the other word. I said that word death again, which is where I usually lose my audience. People never want to hear you talk about death. I want you to become friendly with death. You know, don't be afraid of it. It's only a word. You know, women who run with the wolves. Who is that? Cole Estes? Estes? Tell me, Bora. Clarola Pinkola Estes. Paul, my in-house engineer today. She said one of the major differences between humans and wolves is that the acceptance of death. I mean, the major acceptance is death is a part of being, is a part of passing on. But not we humans. We like to deny it as much as possible. But let's talk about death for a moment. If you're living with somebody, and you're living with somebody as opposed to you have a relationship, as opposed to being married. In the event of death or disability, the law does not provide for boyfriends and girlfriends as it does for husbands and wives. This is very important. I knew of someone, a close friend, whose husband died in an accident, whose boyfriend died in an accident. They were living together. And she got nothing out of his estate. And she was wound up being actually literally thrown out of her own home because the house was inherited. So cohabitating couples must make some estate planning to ensure their wishes are carried out. In the best case scenario, it's really spelled out. Or you could find an insurance company that will accept your partner as a beneficiary. That's another way around it. Another way around them getting everything, you get an insurance company that puts enough money so that the estate has to go to pay off. The insurance company will pay off in some way. It would be wise for people to put their economics intact, in place. But who does that? Who does it? People don't do that. People usually who live together just jump in and say, let's give it a shot. I think there should be an engagement period before living together. We're engaged to be living, to cohabitate. I think that would be a great idea. You wear a ring. We're engaged to cohabitate. You know, we're trying it out. We're going to see what it's like. We live together for a little time. We're engaged. We're not committed to living together yet. Find out all the things you have to deal with. And then when you get back, you know, when you get done with that, then you really make the move. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be taking your calls at 212-209-2900, and we'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. We'll be right back. Vamos, hermanos. Vamos, hermanos. That's from Hotel Costa, number 5. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind in case you just happen to hear some wonderful music and you passed by and you said, what is that nice music? Well, this is WBAI, listener supported. The name of the program is called The Positive Mind. If you think you've just run into one of the most wonderful programs you ever heard and you want to hear more of it, you could hear it day or night anywhere in the world by going to the website thepositivemind.com. I did make one mention, and then I'm going to take your calls about living with a depressed person. What if you're living with somebody who's depressed? How do you not get sucked into it too much? Number one, understand the disorder. Try to find out what depression is and learn that it's not as personal as you think it is. It's the person's illness. Keep in mind that that person, this is number two, cannot snap out of it. The depressed person. You could just say, you know, you could be angry at your wife or husband, but they can't. They can't. It's a real illness. And the chemistry of it drags it down to a point. And it's very, very difficult. They have to get help with it. Ask about their feelings. You know, ask them about it. Admit how powerless you feel to your partner against the disorder. Just tell them, you know, there's nothing I could do, especially when they cry out to you, help me, or I wish you could do something, you know. You see the depression, but you know there's nothing you do. Do not try to rescue them. I'm sorry. As much of a rescue complex as you have, do not rescue them because you can't. And don't make excuses for them. Never become part of the depressed person's denial. Don't lie for him. Don't make excuses or covering up with a friend or colleague. It's not good. Let them deal with it themselves. Encourage them to get help and discover your own life. You know, usually if you got hooked up with somebody who's depressed, it's part of you avoiding your own life by trying to take care of somebody else. And then the depressed person in your life may be ill, but you still have needs of them. Tell them what you need. Tell them what you need. You'll find a way of doing it without blaming them. Above all, remember that even the worst depression is curable, even if you alone can't cure it. Turning point can come at any time, maybe without your even realizing it. If you or your friend do what we suggest, the real person you choose to live with and work with will come back to you for good. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Let's take one of your calls. 212-209-2900. You're on the air. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. My name is Susan.
Hello, Susan.
I'm a long-time listener, and I'm 48 years old, and I do live for the past 4 years with a gentleman. He's 47, and we've hit about 2 years ago a rocky patch, and I asked him to move out and to break up, and he won't. And 2 years later, he's still here. And some, I don't know, background information, I guess, is helpful, is that you were speaking of a depressed person. I am.
Well, no, wait a minute. Whose house is it?
It's mine.
It's your house and he won't move out?
Right. And I called the police.
Uh-huh.
And they asked me if he's lived here more than 30 days and gets mail. And yes is the answer. And then they told me I had to go to household tenant court, which I did. And I had papers served. And he didn't leave. And so they get a second chance. You go back and file more papers. And then you go back and you file the third round of papers. And I never follow through after step one because I'm agoraphobic and major depression for most of my life. And I don't know how to get out of this situation.
there, Susan. It's Armand DeMille again.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Well, that was an unusual thing that happened in our
time.
It's so nice that you're still
here.
That's
a sign I should read into this.
Isn't that great?
I've never made a phone call like this. I've always been too nervous.
All right, but you've reached out now.
So
I was beginning to ask you, Susan, is there any are there any social workers involved in your situation with you?
Yeah.
I'm talking about, what about for you personally, for your agoraphobia, your depression?
I go to a clinic here on the island, Staten Island, where I live. And I see a woman whom I think is really good. However, as she explains it to me, she herself cannot intercede. I'm 48, as I mentioned. If I were like a child or an elderly person, there's agencies apparently or something that could be called up that, you know, this person's being taken advantage of. So I was wondering if maybe you knew some information she didn't know about.
No, I don't know about it.
I could call because what's happening.
Susan, it's a situation that I've never encountered, strangely enough, men who won't leave, and it's your house, right?
Yeah.
It's your house, you have the possession, and the police say he has a right to be there. Something that doesn't sound right to me.
Me neither.
It just doesn't sound right. I would go to a different thing. I'd check on the internet. I'd try to find something, find a solution. I'd get a lawyer, you know, and maybe if you know of a good household lawyer, a good apartment lawyer, or a home resident lawyer who does this kind of thing. I know a couple of people who do very funny things.
Yeah.
Unusual things around housing.
Right.
So maybe you need to get in touch with an attorney who does the work.
All right.
Now, I think I know of one of two people who might be interesting. You could call my office for that information.
Okay.
And I'll try to find that for you.
Oh,
and
thank you.
And if they heard the story, they may know about it, you know?
Okay.
It just seems very...
It does seem unrealistic to me that if I own the house...
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to make sense that if you own a house and you want somebody to leave and he says, no, I'm not leaving, that you don't have some legal rights.
And that, yeah, and they don't recognize any kind of abuse other than physical, it seems. You know, he does not physically abuse me, but he is an alcoholic. He is not paying me. I'm going down the tubes financially, and of course then therefore you know this cannot be helping me get better. And
one last thing, Susan.
Yeah.
You're living in Staten Island, you're agoraphobic, I understand all of this stuff, and you're depressed.
Yeah.
What about, is it your mother's house?
No.
Is it your house? It's been your house ever since you bought it yourself?
Yeah, it wasn't bought new. Other people lived here before me, but it's an old house.
It's an old house.
Yeah.
You know, the other option is if you really want your freedom, sell the house.
That's been told to me. But you know, Armand, although it's trash at the moment from this person, I love my house.
Yeah, I know. I know, but you know, part of the problem with agoraphobia is I love my house.
That's true. I can't get through
it. You know what I mean? It's part of it. Now, I know you're taking some kind of medication. What are you taking?
Well, they've had me on Prozac.
They switched it recently, and I hear it. Are you on Topamax?
No, and I had mentioned that, but they are hesitant because it suppresses the appetite.
Sure.
And I have an eating disorder history.
You have an eating disorder history. So what medication are you taking?
So they're in the process of weaning me off the Prozac and putting me on Luvox, because Luvox has gone generic.
Are you taking any other medications like mood stabilizers or?
I'm taking an anti-anxiety.
Yeah, which one is that?
Klonopin.
I could hear the combination in your voice, and you know, I could hear it. I could hear that in
Does it sound like a dead sound?
No, like, no.
Not like just, a dead, but you know what I mean.
It sounds like an effort. You know, it sounds like everything's an effort.
Yeah, it is.
And
I
for
mean,
you, when you're as depressed as you are. I question whether or not drugs that make you feel like everything is a little more effort may be effective, but it's not my purview. I would check it out a little further. You know,
It would be worth my while to get a second opinion with Dr. Shaw?
Sure.
You know?
Sure, if you could travel that distance.
I mean, it'd be hard. I mean, it's. I guess I don't have to
come
tell
on,
you.
Welcome,
but
welcome
to
Mr. Manhattan. He's around the corner
the
from my office, and if you wind up seeing him, you could stop in and see the studio here at my uptown office.
Oh, I would love that.
Susan, I look forward to talking to you. I hope you can get some help with this. I think you might be able to. And, yes, I do think a consultation. His name is Kent Robert Shaw would be helpful because he'd also have some opinions about the other stuff as well.
Okay.
Okay?
Great.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks.
Unusual. Haven't heard that. The one who wouldn't leave, although I have heard about people who won't leave, you know. And, boy, that's the – you want to have the worst-case scenario, having a tenant – who won't leave, who won't pay the rent. You're somebody who's just struggling to get by. You buy a house for yourself, and then you get a tenant. And I knew a man who rented an apartment to a man whose name was Mr. Key, K-E-Y. Wasn't that enough of a hint? He was Mr. Key, and he just moved to this country, so he had no real history you could recommend. But he had a lot of cash at the beginning, and then he never paid a cent rent. Never one penny, and he was the border from hell. I mean, everything that you could possibly imagine was the worst thing. Couldn't get rid of him at all. And for 4 years, this man lived there, and nobody could get rid of him. And every time the courts would go to him and force him to pay something, he'd pay $100. He'd say, I have no money, so they'd give him a payout plan. He'd pay $100, they'd let him stay, and then he wouldn't pay anything after that again. 4 years. Drove somebody... to need my services. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Hi, I listened to your show while driving many times. First time I had the opportunity to call you.
Great, thanks for
calling
in.
But I enjoyed it quite a bit. I heard you mention about husband and wives sharing things, and I thought that was very interesting. Because I've been married for 25 years now. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
Yeah, okay, sorry. And one of the things that we've never shared with my wife is toothbrushes or things like that.
She doesn't like to share things?
My wife, I might probably do it, but my wife definitely wouldn't.
She's very private about her toothbrush.
Yes.
I understand.
Even though we may share a common glass of water, you know. Where it comes to her toothbrush, she doesn't even have it out. She always puts that away.
She hides her toothbrush. It keeps it safely away. Well, you know, there is some privacy about that, and there are some people who feel very funny about that. There was an experiment that they did in one of the universities where people were asked to spit into a glass of water, just spit, and then they were asked to drink the water. Mm. Now, of course, if you spit into a glass of water and then you drink it, you're just drinking your own saliva. Well,
yeah.
It was 60% of the people couldn't do it. So we have all kinds of funny things about hygiene. So it doesn't make your wife crazy. It just makes her like many other people who just refuse to do that. But what other things won't she share with you?
Well, for instance, if she has a special suit or so, you know, and she has it there, and I would ask her, see, you know what, can I have that suit? She would say, no, you can't have it. But let's say I eat it. Sometimes, you know, we joke around quite a bit, and I would eat it deliberately, and then I would say, you know, well, I thought it was mine, you know.
So you kind of joke.
But then she would say, you know, everything is about you. What about me?
Oh, I understand. Did you ever go in the closet and brush your teeth with her toothbrush and put it back and she didn't know it?
No, I can't.
I'm surprised you haven't done that yet. I don't recommend it, but, you know. Listen, it sounds like you love this woman a great deal. What's her name?
Hazel.
Well, listen, if Hazel could hear you through the ethers, I want you to say this on the air right now. If Hazel, who is not listening to the program probably, could hear you say to her the thing you love about her the most in the entire world right now, I want you to say that to her right now. Say Hazel and then tell her.
Well, Hazel, I love you. We've been married for 25 years, and I every day... getting even better because I get to understand you so much more, and I just can't live without you. And I think she would respond the same. We were married.
Well, wait a minute. You're still talking to her. So I want you to say the one thing about her that's a remarkable characteristic that just touches your heart.
Yes, I love you. I care so much about
What is
you.
The one thing? Pick one item. It doesn't have to be only one, but one wonderful item about her, one wonderful thing.
Because the way you treat me.
The way she treats you.
She cares about me quite a bit, and she looks after everything that I do, my food, my clothing, and she's a working woman, too.
Hey.
So I appreciate that quite a bit.
Pretty amazing, huh?
Yeah.
Pretty amazing, Hazel. We'll let her have her own toothbrush. I just think she earns it.
Yes, that's quite a bit, and I don't even see her toothbrush around because she doesn't want anyone, even my daughter, doesn't know where it is.
She hides her toothbrush. Oh, it's toothbrushophobia. No, I haven't heard of that. What's your name?
My name is Floyd.
Floyd, I want to thank you for calling in. I want to thank you for sharing this beauty and this unusual situation. But, you know, it's kind of the way it is with us, with people, when they live with each other. You live with each other and you have this, there are just certain things maybe odd and unusual, but if you got the kind of love you and Hazel got, pretty lucky stuff. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks a lot for your show.
Sure. One more call, we got a chance. This is Armand DeMille with you with A Positive Mind. Let's take one more call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, turn off your radio.
It's off.
Great. Hi there.
How are you, Armand?
Good. Who is this?
My name is Marcelo.
Hello, Marcelo.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. We got about 1 minute.
Okay. I just want to share something really beautiful with you.
Please do.
It's kind of like the chicken to the egg thing, you know?
Sure.
I don't know why I'm in the best relationship I've ever been in my life. The best 3 years, the healthiest and the healthiest relationship ever with a woman. And it's the best one ever. Now, I also happen to be the best person that I've ever been. Right now, I'm the best partner I've ever been to any other woman. I am to her.
So you've dealt with your addictions.
I've dealt with a lot of them, but my point is that it's the chicken of the egg. I can't figure out if it's the best because I'm doing so, I'm being the right type of a man and a person, and it brings that out in her, or it's just plain luck that I've met her now that I'm ready.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Does that make sense?
Sure it does. And how about it's both? How about it's both? It's a little magic, you know? It's a little gift from the angels. That two ships who kind of pass in the night kind of get together and they find a moment of beauty. I want to congratulate you. How lucky you are.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Hey, what's her name?
Her name is Evangeline Mitchell.
Hey, say to Evangeline. Just say it.
To Evangeline, you know what I love the most about her? So many things, but what I love her smile.
Evangeline, your smile is a gift.
Evangeline, your smile and your sense of humor and your big heart is just incredible, and I'm blessed to have you.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. I've got to be going, unfortunately. Thanks for tolerating our little break in the middle there. You're listening to Ray Bryant on Piano of All People. And just an old buddy. And we will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. If you want to hear this program in its entirety, you could go to the website, WBAI.org, and you could find it among that space. Or you could go to my website, thepositivemind.com, my friends.